Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome on into Forward Progress, presented by the Hammer Betting Network. I'm your host, Eric Plotter from the Gold Sheet, joined by Eric Eager from Sumer Sports and professional sports bettor Suma. NFL Draft is just one day away, so of course, naturally, we will be talking all things NFL Draft again. Quick reminders before we get into it. Like the video, subscribe, and share. Comments will be read in real time. If you want to comment, you must be subscribed to the channel, so hit that subscribe button. Get your questions in for myself, Eric, and Suma. And we have to shout out Pinnacle Sportsbook, the world's sharpest sportsbook offering competitive odds for 25 years. We preach line shopping on the channel, and with everyday competitive odds, Pinnacle should be one of your available outs. In order to support the show, use code HAMMER when signing up to Pinnacle, your trusted sportsbook for 25 years. Bet smart, bet Pinnacle, must be 19 plus in Ontario. Please play responsibly, and it's not available in the U.S. All right, gentlemen, we have a lot to discuss for the NFL draft coming up tomorrow. Of course, we're still getting waves and waves of new information. We're not going to really know. These lines are going to be moving literally up until the draft commences. And again, even during the draft, after we see some things unfold, and we'll talk about some of that as well. But I want to start with a more general just commentary based on some things we've seen from insiders. So Daniel Jeremiah now is saying that he thinks Michael Penix Jr. can go over J.J. McCarthy. Of course, J.J. McCarthy's seen his stock rise incredibly over the last couple of months. Then you also have Michael Lombardi, former NFL GM, saying that he believes six quarterbacks can go in the first round. And now that's just a lot of noise coming from two different respected in their own rights insiders who do have ties to the league and the NFL. So I'll start with you, Suma. What are your thoughts on what Jeremiah and Lombardi are saying? And how do you begin to filter through the noise as we get closer to the draft? Are you just simply watching the odds? And if the odds agree with the noise, or like we talked about yesterday, these odds move a little bit on air. So sometimes it may not be as telling as, you know, a different market. Talk to me a little bit more about your process filtering through what these insiders are telling you and how you see kind of what's might be BS and what you think has some weight to it.
Yeah, it's tough. Like Jeremiah saying Penix could go over McCarthy is like peak draft season, because there are so many rumors coming out today and tomorrow. And even Jeremiah, I think it was last night on the PMT podcast, said that the last 24 hours, most of the stuff that he's getting is mostly noise. So he decided that he wanted to do his mock draft a day earlier this time, because last 24 hours, he doesn't believe that most of the info is too relevant for his own mocking. And I mean, we have people, for example, Jimmy Kemsky, one of the best Eagles beat writers out there, is mocking Amarius Mims to the Eagles after a trade up. I've heard from another source that they might go O-line. And then you have people like Diana Russini reporting Eagles want to trade up for a cornerback. And I think someone on ESPN.com also mentioned Eagles are want to trade up for a cornerback. So what is it now? Is it O-line? Is it cornerback? Personally, I would lean O-line, because I doubt that Howie Roseman will give up significant draft capital for a cornerback. But what is real and what is not? I think in the end, with the amount of draft rumors coming over us today and tomorrow, it's relevant to stay rational and think logically, because at some point your brain might just start to melt, I would say.
Yeah, and I guess a follow-up question on that, Suma. So are there any particular people, because you've mentioned a bunch of insiders that we kind of trust a little bit more, I guess, for lack of a way we're putting it, who's like final mock draft you're really waiting on? Because again, we mentioned Traeger normally in the past has been great, but last year wasn't so great. Who are you kind of waiting on for some final things before maybe firing on something before the market moves?
Yeah, Charlie Campbell has been the number one mock drafter in terms of accuracy over the past 5 years or so. Schrager, yes, he had a terrible mock draft last year, but he usually has connections into the league, especially when it comes to the Jets, for instance, like when Jeremiah Schrager and Charlie Campbell agree on the Jets pick, like a consensus pick, that would something that I would automatically fire, even if the price is moving, for example. So those are the guys. I think in terms of other mock drafters, there's a lot of groupthink. So like 2, 3, 4 weeks out, it's important to look at the whole picture, because even if there's groupthink, some guys are pretty good at aggregating information, putting some of the puzzle pieces together, thinking logically from picks 1 to 32. But like 1 or 2 days before the draft, I personally care more about the guys who have proven to be having actual league sources, like Campbell, Jeremiah, Schrager, for instance. Pelissero put out his annual first round surprise picks yesterday. He usually nails, like, I don't know, 60 to 80% of that. Yesterday, he had Junior Colson at maybe sneaking into the first round. Jeremiah said that some teams have Colson LB1. That was something that I bet, because I've also heard that there might be some off-field issues with Edgar Cooper. So, yeah, it's basically just trying to filter out the noise and trust guys like Jeremiah, Schrager, and Campbell, and also trying to think rational and logically through the process.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you for that information, Suma. Before I pass that same question over to you, Eric, got to talk about the breaking news of Amon-Ra St. Brown signing a 4-year, $120 million deal, 77 guaranteed, highest paid wide receiver in football, former fourth round pick. Eric, did you be able to, I know this happened like right before the show, did you be able to check out this contract a little bit at all? And if so, lay it all out for us.
Yeah, $77 million guaranteed, which is, you know, a really strong number for him. I think you spelled out some of the variables. It's a fourth round wide receiver. He ends up being, you know, it's at least $120 million, you know, in the sort of base part of the contract. So, you know, that's going to clear Tyreek Hill. That's going to clear AJ Brown, guys like that. I think that could mean more wide receivers in round one, because one of the reasons that Amon-Ra St. Brown is getting this deal is because he's a fourth round pick and they don't have the option year to kind of smooth things out. The option year is more expensive now for wide receivers with the top APY being 30 than it is for linemen with the top APY is 25. So you do have to kind of factor that into play. But I do think anytime the veteran market gives high marks salary wise to a position, it means that the demand for that position will be higher in the first round of the draft. So that's just something to think about.
Definitely correlates very nicely with the draft, getting this deal done the day before. And like you mentioned, potentially increasing the odds wide receivers go, as the price clearly for wide receivers is increasing. But Eric, going back to the same question we talked about with Suma, how are you filtering through some of this noise? Do you agree with his list of, you know, mock drafters you stick with? I know at Sumer Sports, you guys do a lot of analysis on all things football. So do you take more of your own analysis onto positional groupings, GMs, schemes into consideration as well? Or are you still kind of sticking through to insiders more often?
Yeah, a lot of it is, you know, whether or not a lot of it is, you know, the mock drafter, whether they've been accurate in the past, there's certainly you know, there's certainly something to, you know, for example, the grinding the mocks data. You know, if you look at the inners of that data, like there are some mock drafters that are much, much better than others. And then the other one is, you know, what are teams' philosophies, right? So I know Cleve TA, who's on this network, had, you know, a really good, you know, set of data that talked about kind of like what teams are looking for as size profiles and everything. But the other part is, what are teams looking at philosophically? Like, so for example, the Eagles are a very analytically driven team, but that doesn't mean they won't trade up. They traded up for Andre Diller. They traded up for Jordan Davis. They've traded up multiple times in the past few years. So even though they're analytically driven, they could be trading up for a particular pick versus a team like, you know, maybe Minnesota, where it really hasn't been that way for them. except for when they've maybe needed a quarterback. And even then, Minnesota has passed on guys like Kenny Pickett. They've passed on guys like Drew Will Levis. So, you know, does that, you know, does McCarthy, you know, actually reach that apex where they'll actually trade up for him? Or are they more linked to Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. should Drake May not make it to them? So it's all about trends. And I think that, you know, looking at, you know, different nuggets, some, you know, people are closer than others in some ways as well. Right. So, for example, Schrager, I think, is closer to Kansas City than he would be a different franchise. So they just kind of knowing like where these people's sources are is important too.
Yeah, very important. Can't have connections with all 32 teams in the league, especially now with everybody being as tight-lipped as it seems to be draft season. But let's bring up a mock draft, Jason. We're looking at the PFF mock draft. They recently just released some of Eric's former colleagues. There's a hypothetical scenario going around now that J.J. McCarthy potentially could go number two overall. Now, the odds are going a little bit toward Jaden Daniels, as we've seen, but like we talked about ad nauseum yesterday, it's not a huge price as to where we would say it's a quote-unquote lock for Daniels to go number two. But let's talk about a little simulator right now. If J.J. McCarthy goes number two overall, let's see how this will potentially change, I would say, so much of what we currently have expected for the first round. Of course, Caleb Williams going one. Eric, talk to me what you think about this scenario, and then also including the Amon-Ra St. Brown signing, which you mentioned could also boost the need for wide receivers. So this could be a huge change in the draft if this would happen. So let's run through kind of your thought process if this does happen.
Yeah, I don't know if the Patriots are a destination for Jaden Daniels. Like that's I think where this whole thing blows up. So if you go with Williams McCarthy, I think the guy that falls is Jaden Daniels in some ways, because you know, you have, and not that Washington's weather is all that much different. I just think that New England, you think about it's this way with different coaches. It's this way with different, you know, I think that they're just looking for that big physical quarterback in New England, and May has that over Daniels. There's also the sack rate, which is, you know, not great for May, but much better than Daniels is over the whole course of their career. Like, I think if it goes this way, for one, I think New England's going to be able to leverage this pick for a ton. So anybody that's coming in and saying, so if you go to trade here, anybody that's going in and saying like, okay, Minnesota only has to give up 11 and 23 for pick three, I think they're insane. You know, so you have to probably look at, if you click on pick three, for example, for New England, and then you click on 11 and 23 for the Vikes, like that is good per the chart. But in the top five picks, when there's quarterbacks on the board, the chart is kind of like the market for like, you know, seafood and stuff like that. So it's probably going to have to be 11, 23, next year's one, and probably something like 157 or 167 or 177 to get that deal done for the Vikings to be able to move up, right? So, you know, I think that would be how I'd have you'd look at that, because you're also going to get teams like New Orleans, like Las Vegas, like possibly Atlanta, who are all trying to move up and get that quarterback at three.
Yeah, definitely a lot of options there. Do you have any thoughts, though, that New England could sit back and just take Drake May as they need to clearly rebuild their franchise?
I would put it at plus 150 that they just sit there and take May. I think that they're – like, look at it from the Vikings perspective, right? The Vikings started their GM head coach journey in 2022, same year as Poles and Eberflus, a year later than Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell. And then, you know, during that time, Aaron Rodgers left the Packers. So in theory, like, they're all kind of rebuilding at the same time. During that stretch, the NFC North has won three playoff games and the Vikings won none of them. And so if you're thinking to yourself, okay, we went with a competitive rebuild, we didn't really win anything, so we failed the competitive part, and we're going to come out of this with the fourth best quarterback at best, that just feels like a complete L for the Vikings front office. So I think that if you're Kwesi Adepo-Mensah, like, you're setting the price for this pick. And if anybody wants to come up over the top of you, so be it. But New England's going to get, I think, at worst, the Vikings' like best offer for the third pick.
Gotcha. Understood. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense the way you just outlined it right there for Minnesota, who definitely could really propel themselves with another quarterback if they get the guy that fits their system and is who they expect him to be. But before we go into some draft day props, we're going to do a rapid fire on some over under on some draft position, as well as some other bets for the draft. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow on Thursday, draft day, Cleve TA and Eric will be live at noon on X, formerly known as Twitter, of course, for a last minute spaces to break down your NFL draft questions. So make sure to be following Forward Progress and the Hammer HQ on Twitter. And then again, Rob Pizzola tomorrow during the first round of the draft will have the Forward Progress view on for a live watch along. I'm sure they'll be gambling on future picks as the board breaks down. Some great banter, some great analysis, and overall great. That is live on the Hammer HQ, Rob Pizzola breaking down the draft with the crew. Okay, guys, let's talk some draft day props, rapid fire. JJ McCarthy, over under 5.5 for the pick, over minus 105, under minus 126. Suma, talk to me. McCarthy, are you buying in all the smoke and mirrors, or you think he's going over this number?
Tough one. I would probably lean over at the current price. Daniel Jeremiah mentioned a couple of times over the past 2 days that he will probably have Vikings not trading up significantly in his final mock. He entertained the idea that JJ might maybe just fall and they might just stick and pick, or maybe do a small uptrade later. Seems like we are going to be looking at quarterback, and then we will probably need like a team trading up to spot 4 or 5. I mean, probably still a slightly more than 50-50 proposition right now, but I mean, Jeremiah sounded confident that the Vikings might not be aggressively pursuing JJ McCarthy after all. And Giants, he basically crossed them off a little bit as a JJ team.
Well, producer Jason just mentioned, and you can see live, obviously the markets are always moving, and right now it just got steamed to minus 161. JJ McCarthy's under 5.5. Again, not like crazily significant, but of course significant enough to move that number. So something to consider. Probably you still lean toward that over. Zoom would definitely provide you a little bit more value if you had that at minus 105, that current price. But some steam coming in right there on JJ McCarthy. Eric, obviously very in tune with the Vikings. You also have a question in the comments talking about your thoughts on the Vikings wanting McCarthy. I know you've on the show mentioned a bunch that you think would be a guy like May they want. Has that changed in your thoughts? And what are your thoughts on McCarthy over under 5.5?
Kwesi had the press conference where he said that there are quarterbacks that you trade up for because they overcome the play of those around them. And then there are quarterbacks that you draft without trading because they can't overcome the play of those around them. I think that that is in clear. I think that that cut line is May and McCarthy. So I think McCarthy drops to 11, they're going to take him. I think if he drops to 8, let's say, they'll take him. And the Falcons will trade back and maybe get Dallas Turner or Laiatu there. I don't know if they trade up to, like, let's say 5 with the Las Vegas or Los Angeles Chargers to get that. Like, it's just too much, right? And if they think that the delta there between May and McCarthy is big, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to do that trade that we just had on the TV, on the screen. And then also have to do a very similar trade for a player that they don't view as highly. So I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I've seen this, you know, happen in one direction. I've seen it happen the other direction many, many more times, which is that the last quarterback that's considered a blue chip player in the group falls. And so I think that that is McCarthy. I agree with Suma. But it does look like people are steaming under here. So it wouldn't necessarily be something I rush to go to right now.
Yeah.
Understood. Still plenty of time for everything to pan out. Let's talk about cornerback Terrion Arnold, over under 15.5, over minus 110, under minus 120. I saw TA actually put out a tweet today promoting a different cornerback to potentially be the number one, first cornerback, I should say, drafted. Talk to me. Coming out of Toledo, are we thinking Arnold is over that number, under the number? Suma, talk to me. Terrion Arnold, do you have any thoughts on his draft position?
No strong opinion. I think that Denver, Las Vegas might be spots to take a cornerback. I think Arnold and Mitchell are very close. Some guys have Arnold ahead. Some guys have Mitchell ahead. Right now, it's probably small in favor of Mitchell. The Colts have been a famous cornerback pick early in the process. Now it's more like they might be going after a wide receiver. I think 15.5 for Arnold is pretty good. I'm looking at like 15.2 right now in terms of mean projection. No strong opinion there.
Understood. Eric, strong opinion or no strong opinion on Terry and Arnold's draft position?
I think it's just about right. I think that, you know, Mitchell has been falling in the eyes of some. DeJean is another one where I think he's linked to the Eagles at 22, but we just talked about the Eagles trading up again. So that could throw a wrench in things. Arnold, to me, is thought of as the highest cornerback prospect by a lot of teams, so that could have some weight. But, you know, if you look at the history of this position, it has not gone as predicted in a lot of different drafts. J.C. Horn went ahead of Patrick Surtain. In the 2020 draft, C.J. Henderson went ahead of A.J. Terrell when many thought that that should have been flipped, and that was a favorite for most of the time. Henderson went 9. Terrell went, I think, to Dimitroff at like 18 or something, 15 maybe. And so corner is a weird one where it really is like a styles makes fight situation. And we could, you know, have a situation like even two drafts ago, right, where Stingley went ahead of Sauce Gardner. That was another one where Gardner was the favorite to be the first corner and the first corner taken for basically that entire market. And then Stingley came in at the end and got a bunch of people a plus price prop. So I do that means basically fade the favorites in this market. And since Mitchell is the favorite, you almost do want to look at Arnold and look at either his unders or look at him in the first cornerback market.
You mentioned some great examples of literally the last couple of years where whoever was the favorite ended up not being drafted. You also mentioned a name here that we're going to discuss next, Cooper DeJean, over 22.5. Of course, now see some mocks of the Eagles, but also a scenario where the Eagles might even trade up. His over is -106. His under is -125. I'll go back to you, Suma. At this point now, like Eric just mentioned, obviously there's a lot of factors in play for defensive backs, also versatility included, scheme fits, etc. Do you have any thoughts on Cooper DeJean? Because he is potentially a safety, definitely listed as a cornerback. Do you think that this number, if you had to guess, over or under for Cooper DeJean?
I think that his pro day really pushed him small lean toward the under. If I had to bet anything, I think from 16 to 22 Eagles, there are some intriguing spots for him. I mean, Bengals could easily go cornerback, for instance. Eagles, they have been connected to cornerbacks throughout this whole process. Seattle, Mike McDonald getting his new Kyle Hamilton, for instance, would be a landing spot. Small lean under, but nothing I would rush to bet right now.
Nothing rush to bet. And Eric, based on everything you've already broken down, Cooper DeJean over under 22.5, where would your head be at, if anything?
I think under in this one case. I think he's the league looks at a guy like Brian Branch last year, and says, you know, the guy looks at Micah Fitzpatrick a few years back, sees that possible versatility. Now, the versatility is imagined because Cooper DeJean, like, only played outside corner last year for Iowa. He didn't even rush the passer, didn't do anything other than play outside corner. But the versatility is what these teams crave. The Eagles, for example, they did bring back Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, but they're very much like a depth organization, and they fell apart defensively last year in large part because of injuries. They don't have a ton of versatility at corner with Bradbury's kind of a one-trick pony. Slay is getting a little older. Like, it makes a lot of sense for them. And again, the Eagles have been a trade-up team in the first round for the past few years in large part because they accumulate draft picks through other means like the compensatory framework and the like, and trading guys like Hassan Reddick a year early and getting those picks. So they can be more of a trade-up team on draft day than analytics teams generally are. So I think it's under here. I would be pretty strong on that at the current price. But, it, you know, again, the cornerback market is super weird. And so another way to possibly bet it would be like DeJean first corner taken. But then again, you have to read the rules and make sure that he's listed as a corner where mm-hmm. wherever your book designates it, because they could rip him off as a safety on the draft night, and then you have some you have some legal issues under your belt.
Yeah, no, certainly makes sense. Gottfried always have to be in tune with the house rules. We've got a question from Brian G. We're going to save that question to the end. We'll finish off with our favorite bets still available and long shot. We do have a couple more rapid fire over unders to get through. And we're going to go next to Amarius Mims, offensive tackle from Georgia. His over 22.5 is juiced to -128. The under is sitting at -104. Eric, any thoughts on Amarius Mims and his draft position?
Yeah, this one's interesting. I actually, we're doing something for the hammer, and this is right around right. I think like if DeJean's off the board, if the three corners Mitchell, Arnold, and DeJean, some permutation of them are off the board, and the Eagles are looking to sort of get younger at offensive line, you know, with Lane Johnson the way he is, and obviously losing Jason Kelsey. They could just be trying to stock up at positions along the offensive line. Mims makes a lot of sense, and I think that's why 22 is the index there. So that one's one where I don't really, think of a – like, I think it could go either way. So mm-hmm. I'm probably going to lay off that one.
So any thoughts on Amarius Mims and his draft position, 22.5?
I was muted, sorry. Yeah, also small lean towards the under. I think the Steelers are an intriguing spot. He also had a visit there. Steelers also looking for center and tackle. Mims would be a very intriguing fit there. And Jimmy Kemsky mocked, who is very plugged in when it comes to all things Eagles, he mocked Mims to the Eagles via a trade-up. I think Mims has an interesting range because from that athletic profile, I think if he had like more than 8 starts under his belt, we might be talking about like a top 3 offensive tackle in this draft, but some teams might be concerned about the lack of experience. But Eagles, they are looking for a guard who might kick out to tackle at some point to replace Lane Johnson. So I think Mims would make a lot of sense there. So Pittsburgh, intriguing spot. I mean, Rams could also use like a left tackle, for instance. Small lean towards 22.5, but Mims, like, it's not a strong assumption by me right now. So just a small lean.
Gotcha, small lean on the Mims under there. I've got a couple more to go through before we talk about our favorite bets still available. So let's talk Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback, Alabama. Coolest name in the draft. I think we could never argue that should be number one ranking there. But is over 28.5, juice to the over, -124, under -107. Suma, what are your thoughts on Kool-Aid McKinstry's draft position?
Yeah, at some point, I think 1 week ago, it looked like he would be sliding. And this morning, the Walter football guys, who have been very accurate mockers over the past couple of years, they mentioned that McKinstry could go a lot higher than his over-under, but they would need like more final information, talking to team sources. And Campbell said that he might mock McKinstry significantly higher than that if he got positive feedback. So something to keep in mind there. So hearing that from someone I respect might be something there. So I would not rush to bet the over right now. And with Nate Wiggins sliding throughout the process, McKinstry might also be the, cornerback 3 or 4 at some point.
Eric, have you heard anything or have any just general thoughts on Kool-Aid McKinstry 28.5?
Yeah, I think the Lions at 29 seem like the natural one, which is why they're putting the number there. Brad Holmes has mostly been a trade. He's traded a lot, right? So to be able to put, to pin him to the Lions and then bet the over to me is a little folly. I agree with Suma. I think that it's probably a layoff situation here, but it is like if you think he's going to go to Detroit, because he has that specific skill set there. That is the thing that makes sense. And you just have to hedge against the fact that the Lions will want to trade up. But if you look at the board, the way it shakes out after, you know, DeJean, Arnold, and Mitchell, and then you also have, you know, Wiggins to Suma's point, like there isn't like maybe a lot of motivation for the Lions to trade up because, you know, Kool-Aid could fall. So I think that it's over or nothing for me, but I'm not like too eager to go and bet the over there.
Understood. Definitely understood. Final player we're going to go over, Blake Corum, running back, University of Michigan. Production cannot be denied, but some of his measurements and athleticism-type scores, not as great as you would expect. His positioning, 82.5, over minus 103, under juice to minus 129. Eric, any thoughts on the national champion and his draft position?
I think it'll probably, just because of a size thing, if anything, it's over. The Chargers are the kind of natural one where they're going to go and possibly take him. But the Chargers are run by Joe Hortiz as well as Corey Krawick, the director of player personnel. The Chargers did take J.K. Dobbins in the second round of his draft, but for the most part that they've been pretty disciplined in, as far as running backs. And so, you know, that's the one I think where people are like, okay, that's the team that's going to overdraft him. But they've already brought Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins into the fold there. I think everybody else is a little bit more sober on his standing as a running back in the NFL. So to me, it's over or nothing.
Over or nothing. Suma, anything on Blake Corum and your thoughts on his draft position?
I will be completely honest, no clue. I have no clue where to put this guy. I mean, could the Chargers get like overconfident and draft him in the second round or whatever? I can see that, but no strong opinion. I think there might be a running back one starting late two or whatever rumor that the Cowboys might get a new starting running back, but I have really no sense on that position right now.
Completely understood. All right, gentlemen, let's talk something hopefully that we do have some final thoughts on. Let's go with our favorite bet still available, as well as our favorite long shot bet still available. Suma, if you have that handy, start us off so we can get some actual info for the audience right now.
It has moved in some sites, but you might be finding a Junior Colson linebacker one in the plus 150 range. Daniel Jeremiah said Colson is the number one linebacker on some of the team's boards. Yesterday, Pelissero came out with the surprise round one guys where he had Colson plugged in. I don't think that he will go round one, but I think there is a decent chance that he might be LB1. Peyton Wilson has no ACL or is coming off two ACL injuries. There are rumors that Edgar and Cooper has some off-field concerns, so I think Colson might be in a prime position to be LB1, and in the plus 150 range, I think it's still worth a shot, in my opinion.
Understood. Eric, favorite bet still available, as well as a favorite long shot still available?
Yeah, you're laying a price here at Pinnacle, but I still like over 9.5 offensive linemen taken in the first round. I think that is a pretty good number. I just think that there's so much economics at play here that will make teams do this, including teams trading back into the first round to do it. I think my long shot bet, like, this is pretty easy. This will be off, you know, this you'll determine, you'll see whether or not this plays like almost right away. But I do think Malik Nabers, like 11-2 to be the first wide receiver taken, has some validity to it. To me, I think that's there are teams, whether I agree with it or not, and I don't, that have Marvin Harrison as a more highly graded have Malik Nabers a more highly graded receiver than Harrison. I think it's close, but I think Harrison clears. If you have like one of those like really crazy things happen, like McCarthy goes third or McCarthy goes second, like you might, the way to maybe bet this indirectly is to go with Neighbors as first wide receiver, because if it's not Arizona, it could just be a random team that has that ordering. And so that would be a way to go.
Definitely a way to go. Understood. Like Hitman said yesterday on the show, for these situations, you have to put your ego to the side. You have to understand what other teams like. It's not about who you believe is the better prospect in certain situations. It's much more important what you're hearing and what teams believe, as they're the ones making the selections, not us at home. We're just trying to bet on what we expect to happen. But that's going to wrap us up for today. Again, reminder that tomorrow, TA and Eric will be live on X, of course, formerly known as Twitter, in a last-minute spaces to break down your questions. So come prepare with some questions. And Rob Pizzola will be going live the entire first round of the draft with the crew, discussing all things draft right here on Forward Progress. Remember to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and share to help out the channel. And we'll see you guys on the live watch along and during that spaces tomorrow for the first round of the NFL draft. Thank you guys again. We'll see you guys next time.